That's the amazing banjo work of Michael Miles. He and I will be appearing at the Hideout 6:30 this Tuesday. Go to hideoutchicago.com. We're going to devote the whole show, it's spoken word and music, to the car, the American automobile. Lise Graham may be in the audience, so if you come there, I'll introduce you to her. My guest is a young man who's become a good friend, I think, over the last few years, Michael Osaki, who you do everything, but you're a sports memorabilia expert. How's that?
That's exactly correct.
The way you came, tell people, I was so charmed with the way you came, and you will sense, ladies and gentlemen, by the time I let him go at 10:45, his passion for what he does. But it all started when you were 11 years old and your grandfather.
Yeah, my grandfather, for my birthday, he bought me a shoebox full of very old baseball cards. And the reason why he did that, Rick, is because he knew I liked baseball cards and basketball cards. I was getting all the current modern-day stars from the local grocery store or pharmacy. So my grandfather got me that shoebox. Inside were cards from the 50s and 60s, things I never seen before, players I never heard of.
Yeah.
And I picked each one up, and I look at the name, I turn it over, I look at the stats, and I started learning not just about the history associated with each player, but then also the values associated with each card, what goes into making this card worth $1 or $100.
Yeah. Well, some of them, and when I was at your apartment some time ago to see some of these things, it's like, to me, it was like being in an art gallery. It wasn't, you know, that I was so taken with the statistics of, you know, Ted Williams in 1946, though I was taken with those statistics. But the artistry involved in see, if, compared to now, I'm not even going to compare it now, but the artistry, it was an art form, was it not? Am I making too much of this, Michael?
No, you're definitely right. The creators of baseball cards back then, the way that they thought about designing a baseball card was very different back then than it is today. Obviously, today it's so mass-produced, and someone tells a creative guy, okay, you know, you got to make this, okay, and then 5 minutes it gets banged out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Back then that was not the case. The people that they hired to do the artwork were, you know, well-known, fairly well-known individuals.
Yeah. Where in God's, I would not even know, and I'm telling you, I would not even know where to go today to buy a except to you, but to buy a contemporary baseball card, where do they have them? Where do you go? Because I remember it was the ritual of summertime, especially to go to the grocery store and buy some gum, and you'd get five cards, and you'd see or four or five cards, and you'd see who was in there.
Yeah, and also back then, about 20 years ago, there were baseball card shows every single weekend all over the state, all over the country. You could go to the Holiday Inn, Ramada Inn, right, and there'd be maybe 30, 35 tables set up, and you can buy the cards. Now, I never see any card shows. You never hear of any hotel in any area having a card show.
Yeah.
And it's been like that for quite a long time now.
How did you, as a young guy, after this initial after your grandfather hooked you, you obviously collected and you started to get serious about it. When did you start? You went to Indiana University? Where did you go to school?
I went to in Champaign, University
Champaign,
of Illinois in Champaign, yeah.
UVI, and studied business or some commodities or something.
Exactly, yeah.
When did this become a business for you?
Sure.
Did you sell any cards as a teenager?
No, I never did. You know, it was funny, though, because I was always buying.
Yeah.
I was always like, wow, I never seen this before. I've always wanted this card. I have to have it. I need to buy it.
Yeah.
And so I was just collecting, collecting, collecting. And then after I graduated college, you know, you go to all these classes and you're like, okay, you know, now I can go in the real world and, you know, use my degree.
Right.
And I was like, wow, you know, this is my passions. I talk to people about what I do, and they're so enthralled and they're enamored. They go, Michael, wow, you know so much about all this stuff. And I put my thinking cap on, like, wow, this is what I need to do. This is where I need to be.
Well, in a sense, that baseball cards and other memorabilia, of which you have, my God, you've got ticket stubs, autographs, programs, scorecards, And not just baseball, but though baseball is the top of the, baseball is like 80% of the world of
yes,
trading and commercial sort of memorabilia. It is a commodity, though. I mean, that's why your study, I mean, it is in a sense like a commodity, is it not?
Some of these things can be a commodity, right? But there are some rare things, you know, a game-used item or a card that I don't think is a commodity or can be commoditized, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
There is, of course, like the holy grail in our industry, the Honus Wagner T206 baseball card. Every year or so, you'll see it on CNN or the Wall Street Journal. Hey, this card sold for a couple hundred thousand or
right,
a couple million, depending upon condition. And so wherever I go and I tell people what I do, one of the first questions they always ask is, Michael, do you have a Honus Wagner card?
Yeah.
The answer is no, I don't. And then
have you ever been offered one?
No.
You do, though. There will be people who call you and say, hey, I have a Honus Wagner card. I mean, you get those calls sort of frequently, right?
Yes. Yes, I do. And what happens is, because the Honus Wagner card is the big kingpin in the industry, there are a lot of forgeries and reprints out there. If you go to flea markets or garage sales, you can find them. And so people will call me on a very, very regular basis saying, you know, Michael, I think I may be a millionaire. I have the Honus Wagner T206 baseball card. How much is it worth?
Yeah. And you have to say, well, where'd you get it? And they say, well, I got it at a flea market for $10.
And then the next question is, send me a picture of it. Send me a picture of the front and send me a picture of the back. And I can quickly tell, you know, if it's good or not. And, you know, no, this is, you know, reprint, you know.
Let me ask you, with new technologies, and I keep reading about them, I'm a huge, is it a strange fan of the business of counterfeiting money. I read some book about it years ago. And the technology is getting such that, is it not, you know, computers and colors and all sorts of things, can you, a person who is knowledgeable, can they make a good, reputable fake that could fool you?
They could certainly try. However, if you've been around the business as long as I have, see, the problem is if you were to try and fake a baseball card or a football card or any piece of paper, the paper on a card from 1948 is very different than the paper today. So the graphics might look spot on. They could try and look, you know, but if I look at the paper, I can feel the paper. I can smell the paper. Also, I know that paper oxidizes at a certain rate over time. If it's bright white and glossy today, no, this is probably not legit.
One of the other things, Michael Osaki, in his website, you should go to his website. It's a great, great website. It's baseballintheattic.com. It's a wonder. You'll get lost there because it's just fun and it's interesting. Baseball cards, no one is ever going to pay more than 2 cents for a, who are the best two baseball players now, Mike Trout, Clayton Kershaw, or Bryce Harper cards. That 40 years from now, those will, because they're not the same.
That's tricky, right? Because right now, those cards that you just mentioned, Aaron Judge from the Yankees, the prices are going through the roof. You know, people see them on TV hitting homers in the All-Star game.
Yeah, he's a phenomenon right now.
Yeah. But you got to be so careful because, and I always tell people this, you buy something because you like it. Do not buy it for an investment. Let's say, you know, an Aaron Judge could tear his ACL tomorrow.
Well, he's having a horrible second half of the season,
too.
I mean, he may be an interesting flash in the pan. I mean, who knows? Who knows?
And that's why, you know, for me and like what I do, the values of the Mickey Mantle, the Hank Aaron, their careers are long over. A lot of them are passed away.
Sure.
And they weren't on steroids.
Correct. Is this steroid thing, I mean, let's think of one specific guy. Let's say Mark McGwire. Did the steroid era decrease the value of cards of Mark McGwire, Barry Bonds, all the others who were
Sammy Sosa, yes.
Sammy Sosa, who were tainted in that scandal?
Without question. I'll give you just a quick example.
Sure.
Last year I was in Kansas. I do a lot of speaking engagements across the country. And a lady after my presentation came up to me. She was probably in her late 60s, and you know, she's like, Michael, I have a whole bag full of signed baseballs. They were all Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa, about 50 of them. Mm. And I said, why do you have so much? You know, were you a fan? She's like, a long time ago, in 1998, my financial advisor told me I should put all my money into Mark McGuire and Sammy Sosa stuff.
Wow.
And I was speechless.
Yeah, speechless and heartbroken, too. Because you, as much as it is your livelihood, Michael Osaki, it is your passion. I mean, you are not, I know this sounds crazy to say, ladies and gentlemen, but you're not totally motivated by money here. This is your passion. Okay. We're going to spend the next half hour with Michael. Look at what the commercial I have to read is. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. This is unbelievable. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. And if Michael is telling you, be careful. Just be careful. Do not get this stuff because you love the players or you love the team. Don't do it because you're thinking of this as your retirement fund. We'll be right back. Michael Miles again. He and I will be at the Hideout 6:30 Tuesday. Go to HideoutChicago.com. I'm talking with my pal, Michael Osaki, about whom I wrote a story before I even had him. I ever had him on the radio. You can find out more about him at BaseballInTheAttic.com. He's an articulate, passionate purveyor of sports memorabilia, 80% of it baseball. But he also is, his passion, he just told a heartbreaking story about a woman who'd been told by her financial advisor to invest in Sammy Sosa and Mark McGuire signed baseballs because this would be like kind of her annuity. If you're going to collect, collect out of passion. Do not collect out of some financial need. Because, too, Michael, we were talking just off air, in your business, there are a lot of people, there can be, as in any business, some unscrupulous people who get a lot of press.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. It's every business. There's always a couple of bad apples that kind of ruin it for everybody.
Yeah.
So you just have to keep your eyes open and your ears open and, you know, understand who you're dealing with.
Yeah. When someone, you get calls, when I was in your apartment, your phone rings all the time. I mean, people are finding stuff all the time. There's someone who found, you know, a Babe Ruth autographed baseball fell out of an attic or fell out of a garage or something. And you're like, well, that's very interesting. What's a recent call you got that really intrigued you?
Yeah. I got a call recently, a guy on the East Coast. There's a set from 1933 Gaudi. It was manufactured in Boston, Massachusetts. And this set, actually, on a side note, was the first set to include bubblegum. So most of us are familiar in the 50s and 60s.
Oh, yeah.
Well, the idea originated in 33 in Boston. And the set has 240 cards. It's littered with Hall of Famers. There's four Babe Ruth cards in the set, two Lou Gehrig cards, a couple Jimmy Fox. Anyways, and he said that, you know, he has the complete set, and the condition is pretty good. And I haven't yet seen it in person. So
Where did he find this?
It was passed down to him.
Wow.
It was passed down. And I think we're going to start seeing more of that. In the future, things have been passed down. And maybe
from kids who grew up in the 50s and 60s. Yeah.
And the next of kin maybe wants to turn it into cash to go on a family's vacation or pay the mortgage or send their kid off to college because college is so expensive these days.
Yeah.
And say, hey, you know, I have, you know, $10,000 worth of baseball cards.
Well, see, there may be a boom coming for you with baby boomers who are older and have put their stuff away, and some people who didn't have anybody to will it to, you know what I mean? People like my age and a little bit older who have stuff out there. Are you thinking of, I mean, is that likely?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. You know, things kind of ebb and flow, especially by season, seasonality. Right, if I think about the springtime, people are digging out their closet, their attic, their garages, and finding these things.
Sure.
But to your point, the baby boomers, yes, I hope that more people will find things and more people will call me and say, I have this, you know, what's it worth?
Yeah. The one of the other things that can elevate the market is death. I remember when we talked last time that Ernie Banks died and all of a sudden Ernie Banks stuff was worth more than it was 2 days before he died. Yeah. That's a sad part of your business, isn't it?
It's kind of morbid, yeah. Usually there is a spike after someone dies, especially of a Hall of Famer. However, in one case that did not happen was Bob Feller. Bob Feller was the great
pitcher.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Right, you're very familiar, Rick.
Yeah.
Well, he gave me his last public interview in July of 2010, but he passed away in December of 2010. Well, Feller grew up in Van Meter, Iowa, a small town, and when he passed away, the Van Meter newspaper called me up and said, "Hey, is it okay if we republish the article that I wrote for Parade magazine?" And I was glad. I said, "Gladly, sure." But what happened was, when he passed away, the value of his autograph actually went down, because he signed millions upon millions of autographs over the course of his career. And when he died, nobody was looking for his autograph, and all of a sudden, all this supply came on the market. People were trying to sell it, and the value went down.
Wow. One of the things about autographs seem now, when I was going to Wrigley Field in Sox Park when I was a kid, it was so – these guys would autograph anything. I mean, because there wasn't this kind of market for it. Now, the whole autograph biz has changed dramatically, has it not?
Yeah, and let me say also, not only were these back in the 60s and 70s, the players would sign, they would gladly sign. Now, you know, these players are getting paid millions of dollars a year.
Yeah.
They don't really care to sign. And not only that, Rick, when they do sign, their signature is not, you can barely
read it. Yeah, it's like a line.
Yeah, it's like a line. Back in the day, you could read someone's signature. Willie Mays, Hank Aaron. Now, good luck.
One of the other things, Michael Osaki, and again, you can find out so much information about Michael, and go through your attic tonight. If you stay up and go through your attic, see what you can find. Go to baseballintheattic.com. I may know the reason to this, Michael, but why is baseball 80% of your market and 80% of the sports memorabilia market? Why is that? I know it's America's game. I know it's... But also, you know, early, I suppose, if you had a Red Grange autograph from football, it'd be worth something, yeah. I suppose. But why baseball?
So baseball, as you said, is America's pastime.
Yeah.
And when you think about this sport, it got organized professionally in the late 1850s, early 1860s. And there's a lot of history there. And when you think about basketball and football, those came later. There's also... It just seems like a lot.
And golf, for instance, was a relatively elitist niche sport.
Yes.
Yeah.
And golf still is.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Is there
any market for golf memorabilia?
There is, depending upon what it is. So, for example, if you have Payne Stewart's knickers that he wore.
Yeah.
You know, he passed away at a very young age.
Right.
You know, those are valuable. But like an Arnold Palmer signature, no, maybe it's worth $25.
Wow. Even on a golf ball, who knows?
The $30 on a golf ball, $25 on a piece of paper.
What do you see now? I ever worry about you with the internet. I ever worry that, you know, plug in something and there's, you know, the eBay and these other kind of things. Do you think, and I know it's self-serving, but... I think it's crazy to buy something of some value through just looking at a picture on a computer.
Yeah, you know, and people do. They do it all the time. They do it every day. I think it's going to be tough for a computer or robot to replicate my knowledge, my passion, my expertise. I'm in a niche industry here. But I'm also an expert in this niche industry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've been around it for, you know, 2 decades now. And I think experience, as with anything, is very hard to duplicate.
Sure. Do people come and visit? I'm not going to tell people where you live, and you have most of your stuff in storage places anyway. Do people come and visit you? Does anybody ever come? This is a very intriguing question to me, and say, "Hey, I want to start collecting sports memorabilia, and I don't know where to start. Can I come talk to you?" Has that ever happened to you, Michael?
Sometimes. People will come to the Hancock where I live. No, I'm just kidding. I don't live in the Hancock.
They'll come to his huge mansion in Lake Forest.
Right. Let me tell you, there are some, how to be polite, some interesting people, but sometimes they want to get too close and too personal. And yes, I have a phone and I have an email, but where I live, I keep that separate.
Yeah.
And it's not a museum, even though some people say, you know, it looks, you know.
Fantastic. It did to me. And the reason I got to go there was because I was writing a story about Michael. And we went there with a great photographer, Phil Velasquez, who was like totally blown away by all the things that you had. The thing about baseball is many of these cards, the Honus Wagner card was used to advertise cigarettes, right? And there were all sorts of tie-ins to businesses over the years that I found fascinating. I'm going to keep Michael for another 15 more minutes after the news because I find what he does fascinating. He is passionate about sports memorabilia, specifically baseball, and you can read more about him and see more about what he does. He's also a great speaker. He travels the country speaking to libraries and associations of various kinds, explaining the allure of what he does. Go to baseballintheattic.com and stay tuned.
Did you ever wake up to find a day that broke up your mind?
You want to hear that man sing and play? Come Tuesday to the Hideout at 6:30. I will be with him. We'll be devoting a show to cars, automobiles. I've got 10 more minutes with Michael Osaki, who is one of the most interesting people in Chicago. You may say, well, he sells baseball cards and stuff, but he is passionate about when he shows you a baseball card and explains the artistry involved and the history of it, it is like there is living history. It's like going to a museum, I think, Mike. I'm not trying to make too much of this, but you have such an appreciation for the history and time and place of the many objects that you sell that is what I think elevates you above people who may be in this business simply to make money.
Thank you.
So take the compliment.
Thank you.
The compliment. We were talking about the contemporary cards. The quality of these cards as I have seen them is terrible. They're mass-produced. They do not have the artistry of the cards I used to take and put in the spokes of my bicycle. They're all mass-produced now, and forget their value for a time. I cannot even imagine that young kids, even young boys, collect baseball cards anymore of this era. Do they?
They really don't.
Yeah.
I mean, on very rare occasion, I hear about it, and I do speaking engagements across the country,
sure.
And I very rarely see any kids with their dad or grandfather or grandmother. And it's kind of sad because I think that, you know, this hobby this industry that I'm in, it's going to have a lost generation because anyone under the age of, let's say, 21, 25 has never collected a baseball card, probably never even seen a baseball card.
They certainly don't know how to keep score with a scorecard,
I
thought was one of the great things that generations passed down to generations, learning how to keep score. I don't see anybody keeping score at a game now.
No, that's not a good example. If you go to a game, White Sox, Cubs, it doesn't matter, and you just look around.
Everybody's on their iPhone.
Everyone's on their iPhone.
Yeah.
Not even paying attention.
Yeah. It's changed. It's just become a big money kind of thing. Speaking of the Holy Grail, that Honus Wagner card, is there anything else that you would fall off if someone called you and said, "Hey, I have a so and so," that would make you fall off your chair?
I think a Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig dual signed baseball. I think that'd be pretty special.
Yeah,
and also very valuable. And on a quick side note, in this particular example, when Lou Gehrig signed anything, well, especially a baseball, when he signed a baseball, he almost never, ever signed it on the sweet spot. The reason why he did not sign it on the sweet spot because he recognized the greatness of Babe Ruth, and always reserve the sweet spot for the babe to sign it in case that
is
person.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
How humble is
Very
that?
Very humble, yeah.
And how inspiring, too. That's really something.
And also, don't forget that Gehrig and Ruth didn't really see eye to eye that often.
Well, they seemed like very different personalities, too.
They were, but Gehrig respected the greatness of the babe. And if he was the first, if Lou Gehrig was the first signer to sign a baseball, he would always sign a side panel in case Babe Ruth wanted to sign it at a later date.
Wow. What would they do with those? What was the reason that players signed baseballs in those days? What, you know, there weren't card shows and there weren't. Why would they sign them?
Well,
as gifts to some fans or friends of the Yankees owner or something?
Not usually as gifts, but, you know, there were just fans who just, you know, wanted something to take home. And if they had a baseball, they would give it to him. Also, Babe Ruth grew up in an orphanage
right.
in Baltimore, Maryland.
Yeah.
And so he spent his entire life with kids. And a lot of times he would actually want to sign something for kids attending the game or he saw out and about at a restaurant.
Yeah. Again, it's so interesting. Do you think that any sport, I'm curious now about, you know, the most popular sport in the world, which happens to be soccer, is there, or football as they call it in other countries, yeah. is there any market out there for, because I keep reading about these amazing salaries and the incredible popularity of that sport. Is there a card or memorabilia aspect to that sport at all?
Not right now, no. In the future, I don't know because we just don't know, but no. There just is no demand, especially here in this country, in the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
Outside in Europe and South America, they're obviously huge soccer fans.
Sure.
But even so, they're huge soccer fans, but there's no, you know, $500,000 piece of soccer memorabilia.
No Pele soccer signed soccer ball. What about basketball? And I only ask because of the a certain player that we had in this town for a number of years who is arguably among the most famous athletes in the history of all sports, Michael
yeah.
Jordan. Any kind of market for Michael Jordan stuff?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's very strong market. And, you know, a Michael Jordan signed basketball could be anywhere from $500 to $1,000. A signed jersey, non-game-used jersey, but just a signed jersey. $700 to $1,500.
Wow.
But you have to pay careful attention because I see a lot of fake Michael Jordan autographs on the market.
How can you tell? Well, you're an expert. That's how you can tell. It must infuriate you on some level when you see these fakes.
Yeah, and they're out there. They're everywhere, not just Michael Jordan, but I would say from a top 10 perspective, Muhammad Ali, Mickey Mantle, you know.
The icons.
The icons,
the
right?
The real icons.
Right, because nobody's going to try and forge a signature of a John Doe.
Right, right. What about someone like, what about when you're arguably famous and certainly never be in the Hall of Fame, but a great baseball player and a man of some notoriety. What about someone like Pete Rose?
So Pete Rose is
it's like getting a, you know, I don't mean to say this, but it's like getting a, you know, John Wayne Gacy autograph or something because he's infamous.
Pete Rose is interesting, right? His full-time job for years now, 6 days a week, he works in Vegas signing his life away.
Yeah.
So you can go to eBay and buy a perfectly genuine, authentic signed baseball of Pete Rose for $40-$45. Or you can fly to Vegas, shake his hand in person, and get a signed baseball for about $100.
But it's like double the price if you're on
yeah.
site and shoot, get a handshake.
Yeah. So
that's what he does. That's what he spends his time
yeah.
doing.
That's what he does. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. What do you look for down the line? You're still a very young guy, and I know you write. You write for Parade. You do interviews for them. You talk all around the country. Yeah. What's the future of the sports memorabilia business, because you're at the heart of it?
Yeah, well, I think as this business matures and gets older, and I'd like to work for a sports club, a team, and kind of help them build out a vintage sports memorabilia case. You know, for instance, the Cubs, you know, They're expanding. They're building everywhere around Wrigley Field, but they don't have a centralized repository.
That's a great idea.
To, you know,
you sort of become the official archivist for a team.
That's the goal, yeah.
Wow, that'd be great.
That'd be fun.
That would be fun.
Yeah.
Mike, you're an amazing guy.
I
love talking to you because this whole notion fascinates me. And you're going to get, you know, it's quite possible you'll get a call tomorrow saying, hey, I've discovered this or I've discovered that. But you're also on a daily basis surrounded by things that spark your imagination and they spark your interest and they lead to more knowledge about stuff. What's the great frustration for you?
Great frustration is a lot of fakes and forgeries, not just autographs, but cards in the marketplace, and people are duped into thinking that they have something valuable, and it's not. And sometimes these things have been passed down for several years, decades, and they think, okay, well, my Johnny is going to college now, and I was told that this is a real Babe Ruth autograph. It might be worth $20,000. And then I get a hold of it, and it's, you know, it's worth a dollar.
Ugh, that's so sad.
That frustrates me. And then also, you know, there's other people who try and who are in my business, not in Chicago or the state of Illinois, mm-hmm. but claim themselves to be experts, but they're not. They like sports. They like to watch TV, and they like the Cubs games. But it's very different. You know, what I do, you know, I very rarely, you know, will watch a Cubs game. I'm studying my craft.
I'm
fielding phone calls and emails at midnight. You know, this is what I live and breathe. You know, and so when someone says, "Oh, I'm just going to use somebody local," that doesn't know that because they like sports. Or, you know, it frustrates me.
Well, yeah, I think you're in a fascinating business, and I think you've used your college degree to good effect. You can find out more about Michael by going to baseballintheattic.com. And if you find something in your closet, don't call me. Get a hold of him and have him come over and consult. I mean, I know you do that too. You consult people on, you know, that's something. If you think little Billy is now 8 years old and you think maybe this Babe Ruth baseball you're going to sell in 10 years when he does go to college, see if it's worth anything now, and then you can start saving in some good, decent kind of way. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great idea, Rick. And like you said, you know, if you have any questions, go to my website or email me, michael@baseballintheattic.com.
Yeah. You're a good guy, Michael. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Rick.
Continued
it's great to
success.
Be here. Thank you.
Continued success. We'll take a little break, and then we'll talk to a guy we talked to a couple weeks ago. But first, I'll tell you this. Thank you.